of Mark, chapter 8, book of Genesis, chapter 21, and the book of 2 Kings, chapter 6. And we'll be looking at them in that order. Mark 8, Genesis 21, 2 Kings, chapter 6. In Mark 8, we'll read verses 22 through verse 25. And he, that is Jesus, cometh to Bethsaida, and they bring a blind man unto him, and besought him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand, led him out of the town. When he had spit on his eyes and put his hands upon him, he asked him if he saw aught or if he saw anything. And he looked up, that is, the blind man, and said, I see men as trees walking. After that he, Jesus, put his hands again upon his eyes and made him look up, and he was restored and saw every man clearly. And then in Genesis 21, verse 19, and God opened her, that is Hagar's, eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad to drink. And then in 2 Kings chapter 6, we begin reading with verse 8. Then the king of Syria warred against Israel and took counsel with his servants, saying, in such a place shall be my camp. And the man of God sent unto the king of Israel, saying, Beware that thou pass not such a place, for thither the Syrians are come down. And the king of Israel sent to the place which the man of God told him and warned him of, and saved himself there not once nor twice. Therefore the heart of the king of Syria was sore troubled for this thing, and he called his servants and said unto them, Will ye not show me which of us is for the king of Israel? And one of his servants said, None, my lord, O king, but Elisha the prophet, that is in Israel, telleth the king of Israel the words that thou speakest in thy bedchamber. And he said, Go and spy where he is, that I may send and fetch him. And it was told him, saying, Behold, he is in Dothan. Therefore sent he thither horses and chariots and a great host, and they came by night and compassed the city about. And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, a host compassed the city both with horses and chariots. And his servant said unto him, Alas! And his servant said unto him, Alas, my master, how shall we do? And he answered, Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them. And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw. And behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. In each of these passages, we see the Lord giving sight. In each passage, as a result of the work of the Lord, people saw. We see in Mark 8, in verse 25, he put his hands again upon his eyes and made him look up, and he was restored and saw every man clearly. Genesis 21, verse 19, we see, and God opened her eyes. And in 2 Kings 6, and verse 17, we see that the servant of Elisha saw. God opened his eyes, and he saw. And what is revealed in these passages, of course, reveal a great need amongst God's people today, and that is the need to see. The need to see, and our subject tonight is the need to see clearly. We want to, from the text in Mark, we have the need of spiritual sight presented, the need of clear spiritual sight. And then in Genesis and 2 Kings, there is an illustration of the value of God-given sight. So we want to look at these texts. In back in Mark chapter 8, We see the great need of clear sight. In the account here in Mark chapter 8, again we have the healing of an unnamed blind man. Different from this morning, we saw that the man in John chapter 9, we were told several times, was blind from his birth. I do not believe that's the case here in Mark chapter 8, because this man knew what a tree looked like. He knew what a man looked like. He said, I see men walking, and they look like trees. So obviously he wasn't always blind. But Mark provides us with the only record of this particular miracle, and in some ways it's the most intriguing of Christ's miracles because it's different than any of the other healing miracles that Christ performed. It's the only miracle, that healing miracle, that Christ performed in two stages. In other words, it was a progressive healing. As well, it was the only miracle where the person was asked if he had been cured. That Christ had never done that before. This is the only time. In this particular miracle, there was no command given by Christ to this blind man. Now, as we know, all the healing miracles of Christ are instruments for teaching. They are parables in action, pictures of truth, and this miracle, of course, is no different. And it's important that we do not miss the lesson of the truth of this miracle. If you were to pick up a commentary on Mark chapter 8, if you were to pick up several commentaries on Mark chapter 8, you'd be amazed at the thoughts that are presented concerning this miracle. I mean, blasphemous thoughts, because it took two stages. And I believe that one of the reasons is there's a failure to see the background leading up to the miracle. But again, all the healing miracles of Christ, including blindness, all the diseases that were healed are symbolic of spiritual diseases. They are symbolic of spiritual needs. And so it is here in Mark chapter 8. We see in all the miracles and all the healing miracles of Christ, there's great blessing in putting ourselves in the position of the individual that has been healed. In all the healing miracles of Christ, there's great encouragement to faith concerning what the Lord can do. And no doubt Mark witnessed this particular miracle, and he very simply, very plainly, very intelligibly told what he saw, told what took place in this miracle. There are great depths in all the miracles. There are great depths in this particular miracle. Now, we need to see what Jesus is teaching by this miracle. By way of background, leading up to the miracle, Jesus had just fed over 4,000 individuals with 7 loaves of bread and a few small fishes. We see that in verses 1 through verse 9 of Mark chapter 8. Following that, Jesus entered into a ship. It says he entered into a ship with his disciples in verse 10 and came unto the parts of Dalmanutha. While there, the Pharisees came seeking of him a sign from heaven. And in verse 12, we read, and he sighed deeply in his spirit, and he said, why doth this generation seek after a sign? There was blindness. They couldn't see. And this caused Jesus to sigh deeply. In verse 13, Jesus and the disciples get back into the ship to finish their journey. And while in the ship, the disciples manifest a great lack of spiritual insight. They manifest a failure to grasp and comprehend spiritual realities. Notice in verse 14, "Now the disciples had forgotten to take bread, neither had they in the ship with them more than one loaf. And he charged them, saying, Take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the leaven of Herod. And they reasoned among themselves." So this discussion is going on amongst the disciples or the apostles, saying, "It is because we have no bread." The reason Jesus is reproving us is because we did not bring bread. In verse 17, "And when Jesus knew it, he saith unto them, Why reason ye because ye have no bread? Perceive ye not yet, neither understand? Have ye your hearts yet hardened? Having eyes, see ye not? And having ears, hear ye not? And do ye not remember?" And then notice in verse 21, "And he said unto them, How is it that ye do not understand?" They lacked spiritual insight. This is the background leading up to coming to Bethsaida, where they would meet this blind man. So this is the background leading up to the healing of this blind man. And we have to remember that. Now, in verse 22, they arrive in Bethsaida, and we read there that they bring a blind man unto him. And we read in verse 23 that he took the blind man by the hand. That is, Jesus Christ stretched forth his hand, took this man by the hand, and it says he took him by the hand. The next thing we read is that Jesus led him out of the town of Bethsaida, because that's where they have just come. So, holding his hand, he is leading this man on the outskirts of the town. And you can only imagine what is going through this man's mind at this time. But next we read that when they got outside of town, Jesus spit on his eyes. Then we read that he put his hands, that is, he placed his hands upon this man's eyes with intention, with purpose. He placed his hands, plural, both hands, on his eyes, probably one on each eye. We see in verse 25, after that he put his hands again upon his eyes. And then we see that he made him look up. That is, he probably took his head and directed his head upward. And he made him look up, and he was restored. And it says he saw every man clearly. Now, the first time, Jesus said, "Do you see anything?" And he said, "Yes, I see men, and they look like trees." So Jesus, again, placed his hands upon him. And now this man, he says he saw every man clearly. He saw every man clearly. He could see clearly. There's now beauty in his life. He could see clearly, and now he has a different perspective on life. His whole thought process has now changed. His manner of living would now be different. And notice in verse 25, you have two words. He made him look up. And he was restored and saw. You have the word look and you have the word saw. They're not the same thing. There's a big difference between looking and seeing. We can look without seeing. But this man looked and he saw. So Jesus healed this man in two stages. And the reason for doing so was very deliberate and was with purpose. On Christ's part, he's teaching the apostles something. He's teaching them what they need at this very moment. So Jesus healed this man in two stages, not because this was a particularly hard case, as some have suggested. This case of blindness was so severe it took Christ twice to do it. That's blasphemy. That's utter ridiculousness. That's not the reason. And again, you have to remember the background leading up to the miracle. The disciples were lacking spiritual understanding. They were lacking spiritual insight. And in that blind man, being brought from blindness to sight, was a picture of themselves. When he asked the blind man, "Do you see anything?" And he said, "I see men walking as trees." That was the position of the apostles. They didn't see clearly. And when he laid his hands on him a second time and he said, I see every man clearly. He's telling his, it's like telling his apostles, "This is what you need. You have blurred vision right now. Just as this blind man saw men looking like trees, you have blurred vision right now. This is what you need. You need the touch. You need another touch of Christ to cause you to see." So I believe, and people can believe what they want, but I believe that Christ is giving them a picture of themselves. He's putting a mirror in front of them. Just as this blind man could not make a clear distinction between men and trees, between trees and men, they did not make a clear distinction regarding the teachings of Jesus Christ. Their vision was blurred. Their vision was hazy concerning spiritual things. And when this blind man said, I see men as trees walking, he could see, but everything was blurry. Everything was hazy. He could not make out the details. Now that would be very confusing. That would be a very confusing way to live life if you couldn't tell the difference between a tree and a person. That would be a very confusing way to live. That would be a very troubling way to live. You can see, but you do not see clearly. And that is the condition of many of God's people. They see, but they can't tell you the difference between a person and a tree. That is, spiritually speaking, and that, of course, fills their life with confusion. So, in Mark chapter 8, we see the need of clear vision. It is a necessity that we see clearly. And then in Genesis 9, in Genesis 21 and in 2 Kings 6, we have the illustrated to us the value of God-given sight. In Genesis 21, Hagar has been cast aside. She's now homeless. She's been sent away. She no doubt feels betrayal. She no doubt is deeply hurt. She has suffered a tremendous loss. And Hagar and her son Ishmael, it says that they wandered in the wilderness. They did so to no avail, accomplishing absolutely nothing, getting absolutely nowhere. Their lives were dismal. Their lives were very empty. They have gone from Abraham's tent to wandering in a wilderness. They have gone from Abraham's tent to a place of restlessness, to a place of difficulty and hardships, to a place of tremendous strain and unbelievable stress. They are abandoned. They are alone. And they are very vulnerable as they wander through that wilderness. And as Hagar and Ishmael wander through the wilderness, the hot desert sun is beating down upon them until eventually their resources are depleted. We read in verse 15 of Genesis 21, "And the water was spent. Abraham sent them away with a bottle of water, and the water was spent," or it was gone. it was drained. The water was spent in the bottle. They are tired. They are utterly exhausted walking through that wilderness. We picture eventually their walk turns to stumbling. They can't go much further. Their mouths are parched. Lips perhaps beginning to crack. Tongues beginning to swell. No relief in sight. As far as they could see to the north, as far as they could see to the south, as far as they could see to the east, as far as they could see to the west, was sand. No matter where they looked, everything looked the same. Whether they looked to the north or whether they looked to the east, everything looked the same. So from Abraham's tent to not only homeless, but it's hopeless. They have no water. You cannot possibly live too long. She could see that her only son Ishmael, whom she loved dearly, no doubt, she could see that he was dying of thirst. So she places him under one of the shrubs for some shade, we see in verse 16. She did that hoping to give him some comfort, to give him some relief. And then she went a little way away because she could not bear to see Ishmael die. So there she sits. No doubt she's distraught. No doubt she's filled with despair. For she just knew that Ishmael was going to die. So there she sits, exhausted, physically, emotionally, drained. All hope has been withered away. And there she sits in the sand. She looks, if she picks up that bottle and looks into the bottle, it's bone dry. Not a drop. The water had been spent. And as she sits there, we read in verse 16 that she lift up her voice and wept. Or she sobbed. She's heartbroken. Broken. Her world is falling apart. She finds herself in a situation that she could not fix. Wasn't anything she could do. There's no relief in sight. It is a feeling of helplessness and hopelessness. But the biggest problem that Hagar had at this time was not that she and her son were thirsty. Her biggest problem was not that the water bottle was dry. Her biggest problem was not even that Ishmael was dying. All these were great sources of trouble, no doubt. But these were not her greatest trouble. This was not her biggest problem. Her greatest trouble is discovered from what God did for her. Verse 19, and God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water. Her biggest problem was she couldn't see. She couldn't see a well that was right there. She couldn't see it. And it's not, our biggest problem is not the circumstances that we're in. Our biggest problem is a failure to see. A failure to see what God has placed right in front of us. What God has placed in every desert that we find ourselves in. The problem is, she couldn't see. There in that hot desert, right where she was, there was a well. It does not say, and suddenly God created a well. The well was there. And God opened her eyes. And she saw a well. And in that well was what she and Ishmael so desperately needed. And she did not see it until God opened her eyes. There were resources available to her. They were right there. The well was there before she got there. God had already provided it. But she couldn't see it until God opened her eyes. It's not the trial. It's not the difficulty. It's not the desert. It's not the storm that is our biggest and most pressing problem. Our biggest and most pressing problem is our failure to see. That's faith. It is our failure to see the resources that God has provided. She could see the sand. She could see the desert. She could pick up her bottle and look at it and see it's empty. She could see all of those things. But there's a well right there and she can't see it. Unless someone say, well, how in the world couldn't she see it? We do it every day. We do it every day. God puts things right in front of us. And we'll say, oh, I sure hope God provides. It's right there. We need to pray, Lord, open my eyes that I might see. You see how many times you and I, we can see the difficulty. We don't have any problems seeing the difficulty. We see difficulties that aren't even there. We don't have any problem seeing the trial. We see trials that aren't even there. Trials that don't even exist. We have a gift of seeing these things. We see obstacles that do not exist. We create obstacles. We can see the emptiness. We don't have any problem seeing the emptiness. We don't have any problem seeing the weariness. We don't have any problem seeing the heartache. But we cannot see where a problem comes in is our failure to see clearly the resources that God has put right in front of us. The Lord knew where Hagar was. And the first thing God did in Genesis 21, verse 17 and 18, was He got her attention. He said, Hagar, what troubleth thee? He got her attention. That's the first thing He did. Before He opened her eyes, He got her attention. We need to pray that God would get our attention. I don't know what it's going to take with some folks. But we need to pray, Lord, get my attention. And we pray that that's all He has to do is say our name. Hagar. Hagar. What aileth thee? And all the story she could tell. But God got her attention. And then we read in verse 19, and God opened her eyes. And the result of that was, and she saw. She would have never seen had not God opened her eyes. Ishmael would have died. She would have died. The well was right there, but they would have never seen it had not God opened her eyes. The Lord opened her eyes and she saw. As a result of what she saw, it says that she went and filled the bottle with water and gave the lad to drink. Awful lot of God's people walking around with empty bottles. In fact, a lot of them have already discarded the bottle. They don't even have a bottle. But you and I don't have to walk around with an empty bottle. Because there's a well at hand. Whatever desert you may find yourself in, I guarantee you there is a well at hand somewhere. God has already provided everything you need. You just need to see it. And that's why we need to always pray that the Lord would open our eyes. What is the value of this? God opened her eyes. And by doing so, He saved her life. He saved Ishmael's life. I'm telling you, what you can see will save your life. It might save your life. It'll certainly improve your life if God were to open our eyes and cause us to see. In 2 Kings chapter 6, Elisha and his servant are in what appears to be very adverse circumstances. They awoke in the morning, appeared to be like any other morning. And we read in verse 15, "And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth." What was he going forth to do? Well, he was going forth to perform his daily task, just like he did every morning. This is just normal morning, it appears. But suddenly and without warning, everything changed. Everything changed. The young servant looked and he saw that the Syrians had compassed the city both with horses and chariots. Everywhere he looked, there was the enemy. There was the enemy with their horses. There was the enemy with their chariots. No matter what direction he looked, there was trouble. There was difficulty. There was what seemed to be an impossibility. The young servant would look in one direction, hoping to see perhaps a way of escape. He would then look in another direction, hoping to see the same thing. But no matter where he looked, there was the enemy. There was no way to escape. No way at all. We see everywhere that he looked, everywhere he turned, appeared to be a dead end. The enemy with their horses and chariots wasn't something he just imagined. It was real. He could see them. And he could see them clearly. He could see them clearly. Again, we don't have any trouble seeing very clearly and very vividly the enemy. And then we read of his response in verse 15, "Alas," which of course is an expression of misery, an expression of great anguish and distress and torment. He said, "My master, how shall we do?" This is the language of one who is overwhelmed with the situation that he finds himself in. This is the mind of an individual that is filled with anxiety and fear. And with anxiety and fear, he says, he basically is saying, "Elisha, what are we going to do? Do you see those horses? Do you see those chariots? What are we going to do? What can we do?" "Alas, my master, how shall we do?" This is the language of one who feels great danger. It is the language of one who's very agitated. He's very upset. He's unsettled. Very disturbed. "Alas, my master." This is the language of someone who feels trapped in a hopeless situation, and he feels helpless. The young servant had this reaction as a result of what he saw. He reacted this way because of what he saw. On the other hand, you have the reaction of Elisha, who, may I say, was in the very same circumstances as the young servant.
And yet Elisha, very calmly, and with a heart filled with peace and assurance, said to this trembling servant in verse 16, "Fear not. Fear not." That is, just calm down. There's nothing to worry about. Fear not. Elisha, like his servant, could see the enemy. He could see their horses. He could see their chariots. He could see, just like the young servant, that they were surrounded. And he could see all of this very clearly. But Elisha saw something that the servant didn't see. He saw the invisible. And he saw that more clearly than the horses and the chariots. He saw that more vividly than the enemy that had surrounded them. Elisha could see even more clearly than the host that was compassing them. He could see God everywhere. Everywhere he looked, there was God. Everywhere he looked was that which excelled the enemy with their horses and chariots. Everywhere he looked was that which was bigger, and that which was more numerous, and that which was more remarkable and more magnificent than all the armies with the chariots and horses. And then we read in verse 17, "And Elisha prayed and said, Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see. Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see." In other words, Lord, if you don't open his eyes, he'll never see what I see. He won't see it. He will not see it unless the Lord opens his eyes. This servant needed to see clearly. He needed to see very distinctly what Elisha saw. You see, his problem was that he could not see beyond his problem. That was his problem. That's the problem of many. All they can see is their problem. All they can see is their misery. All they can see is their circumstance. And they can't see beyond that. They can't see the Lord. It is, again, it's we reiterate, it's not the trial, it's not the difficulty, it's not the desert, it's not the storm, it's not the enemy that's our biggest problem. It's the failure to see. The failure to see the resources that God has provided. And then we read, "And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man." The result is twofold. "And he saw, and behold." He saw. That is, he could discern. He could notice that the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. He noticed that his master was surrounded with the horses and chariots of God. He noticed that. But it also says that he beheld it. That goes beyond seeing it. That is, he began to really think about it. It got his attention. You can see something without it getting your attention. But when you behold it, it's got your attention. He saw and behold. And behold. His attention now is no longer on the army of the Syrians. His attention is upon God. He saw and he felt the reality of God's presence. As a result, I believe this servant's anguish and distress and despair and fear was changed to peace and contentment and courage. Because just like Hagar, just like the man in Mark chapter 8, and just like this servant here, He could say with the man in John chapter 9, "Now I see. Now I see." Oh, how we need to pray. Lord, open my eyes. Every time we find ourselves in a situation, we need to pray, "Lord, open my eyes. I know that you have provided for this. Lord, I need you to open my eyes that I may see it. Open my eyes." And what we see really to a large degree determines how we live. How we live. Some people, they're always falling to pieces. You say, "Well, that's just the way they are." Well, it might be, but it shouldn't be. It doesn't have to be. You see, they suffer from a lack of clear vision is the problem. And we need to pray, "Lord, open their eyes." When you see someone else experiencing a trial, you need to pray, "Lord, open their eyes. Cause them to see. Cause them to see what they need to see." Because so often we see what we don't need to see. And we need to pray, "Lord, open my eyes. Open their eyes that they might see what they need to see." What they need to see. So God, it ought to be our prayer that God would open our eyes. We've all experienced it. We've experienced it reading the Word. You'll say something like, "Well, I never saw that before." No, God just opened your eyes. It's been there all the while. God opened your eyes. And that happens all the time in our life. The needs, the resources is right there. It's right there. We just need to pray, "Lord, open my eyes. Cause me to see." And oh, what beautiful things, what wonderful things there is to behold when God opens our eyes. And when God opens our eyes, I'll tell you what, it'll make a difference in your thought process. It'll make a difference in your emotions. It'll make a difference in every aspect of your life. You know, people, it makes a difference in the decision, everything. Everything is affected. So we need to see. We need to see clearly. And only God can cause us to do that. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us verse song.